It's time for Wisconsin Life. Les Paul was a musical legend whose pioneering work made the sound of rock and roll possible. In honor of his June 9th birthday, Dean Robbins tells us Paul's story.
Did you know that Waukesha had its own wizard? His name was Les Paul, and he's the most influential musician ever to come out of Wisconsin. Paul helped develop the solid body electric guitar. He created multi-track recording, close miking, and other innovations that revolutionized the music industry. And his fleet-fingered guitar playing made a mark on generations of jazz, rock, and country artists. It's no wonder he became known as the Wizard of Waukesha. Les Paul was born there in 1915, the red-headed son of an auto mechanic. He started performing around town with a $5 guitar at age 12, billing himself as Red Hot Red. He never learned to read music, but he had a swinging style that caught the ear of regional jazz and country bands. They tempted him to drop out of high school and go on the road. In between gigs, Les tinkered with inventions, using whatever materials he could find. His first experiments with amplification involved a railroad tie, two spikes, and a single string. Later, he carved a solid-body electric guitar out of a block of wood, calling it the Log. This was the forerunner of the Les Paul guitar, manufactured by Gibson and revered to this day. Les grew into a national-caliber musician. In the 1940s, he whipped up an eccentric hit record called Lover. It used not two, not three, but eight overdubbed guitars. Les perfected the overdubbing technique on a series of irresistible top 10 songs with singer Mary Ford. The two married in Milwaukee, then became a showbiz sensation in the 1950s with their own radio and TV shows. Crowd-pleasing numbers like Tiger Rag layered Mary's multi-tracked voice with Les's virtuoso guitar.
Where's the tiger? In front of the tiger. Close the tiger.
After this heady success came a setback. Arthritis, hearing loss, and a hand injury forced Les out of the music business in the 1960s. The story might have ended there, but the Wizard of Waukesha had a few more tricks left in him. In the 1970s, he made a Grammy-winning comeback. Later, he began a celebrated residency at a Manhattan jazz club that lasted almost to his death in 2009 at age 94. In his final years, Les Paul received the sort of acclaim that most artists only dream of. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and the Smithsonian honored him with exhibitions. Adoring fans Keith Richards and Eric Clapton collaborated with him. He was even inducted into the National Inventors Hall of Fame. Shortly before his death, he returned to his hometown to raise funds for a permanent Les Paul exhibit at the Waukesha County Museum. It opened in 2013 on his birthday, June 9th, ensuring that this local legend will live on forever. These are amazing achievements for a high school dropout who never learned to read music. Then again, you'd expect nothing less from a wizard.
Dean Robbins is the editor of Madison's alternative weekly, Isthmus.
Wisconsin Life is produced by Erica Janik. It's a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. For more info, check out their website, wisconsinlife.org, or see Wisconsin Life on Facebook.
For more on Les Paul's impact on the world of modern music, Bob Jacobson joins us now. He's the author of the book, Les Paul, Guitar Wizard. Bob, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So do we have an idea about what drove Les Paul? Obviously, he was inventing, making stuff, playing his whole life. Where did that engine come from?
Well, he always talked about, for one thing, having an incredibly supportive mother. From a very early age, she was very, very supportive of all of his tinkering, even when it involved taking apart the stuff that she had around the house, like her record player and her player piano, to see how they worked. So that was one thing. And the other is just, he was just a very, very curious, inquisitive person from a very early age. He wanted to know how stuff worked, and he wanted to always find ways to make those things work better.
He would have been a perfect fit for the maker movement today, I think, with that tinkering and curiosity. Was he a curiosity at the time, or were there a lot of musicians doing what he was doing with the technology?
Well, nobody was doing it at his level, that's for sure. I mean, obviously, the musical advances have been going on since the first ape started banging on the first log. But he really stepped it up. I mean, he would discover a problem. For example, he was a young kid playing concerts in a parking lot of a drive-in restaurant, and he would say, gosh, those people on the far end can't really hear the guitar very well. So he would think about what he could do to make the guitar louder, and the solutions they came up with had to do with jamming the needle from his mother's record player into the bridge of his guitar and hooking it up to a speaker, and you know, using whatever materials he could find, like railroad ties, as you heard in the feature. So you know, it was very problem and solution oriented, the way he thought about music.
To be clear, would we have had rock and roll as we know it if it weren't for Les Paul?
Well, that's a good question. I think that we would certainly have the solid body electric guitar if it weren't for Les Paul, because there was a couple other pretty well-known guitar inventors hot on his heels. It kind of became an arms race between him and Leo Fender and Adolf Rickenbacker, also two big names in the history of guitars. But nobody was working on recording techniques the way he was. He was just light years ahead of everybody.
And I think of multi-track recording in particular, and some of the music I've listened to of his on his birthday today. How big an innovator was he in multi-track recording?
You really can't overstate his influence. He invented multi-track recording. He started off using techniques like ping-pong recording, which became the norm. But what happened later on was that he actually was given a state-of-the-art reel-to-reel recorder by his pal Bing Crosby, and he started just adding new recording heads onto it, and that was how he came up with his first 8-track recorder. He just started just jamming new pieces onto his, his Ampeg reel-to-reel recorder that he got from his buddy Bing.
Did he ever regret dropping out of high school, or was it just, you know, destiny was calling him and he had to answer?
You know, that's a really good question, and I didn't get a chance to ask him that when I talked to him, but, you know, he certainly found ways to educate himself, and, you know, maybe he regretted not getting any formal schooling, but it certainly didn't prevent him from accomplishing any of the things that he set out to accomplish throughout his life.
Apart from the technical side, the inventing and the innovating, what about Les Paul as a musician? How innovative was he as a guitar player, as a guitarist, I should say?
He was a fantastic guitarist. And, you know, the interesting thing to me, I mean, there are plenty of other guitarists who could play as well as him. In fact, some, you know, he became friends with. He was became close with Django Reinhardt at one point when Django was trying to make it in Chicago or in the United States. But plenty of people could play like him. But one thing that he was able to do was to adapt his style to the times and to what he wanted to do in his career. Early on, he was playing kind of corny hillbilly music, and then later he got interested in jazz, so he turned himself into a jazz player. Then when he hooked up with his longtime partner Mary Ford, they were playing kind of country popish music. So he really changed over the years. And then you know, the last recording of his that I just love was something called Les Paul and Friends. You can hear him playing some funk with some younger musicians, and it's just wonderful. I mean, he couldn't really do much as far as agility with his fingers by then, but, you know, he was not afraid to try new styles.
What surprised me about that, I mean, there are a lot of people who get into music and never learn to read music and are great in one genre, but to be able to cross over like that without ever getting into, you know, reading musical notation and be able to break into jazz, especially, how was that a big challenge for him, or did it just come naturally somehow?
You know, I think to some degree it just came naturally to him. I mean, he had an exquisite ear and was able to pick up different styles and pick up the structure of whatever kind of music he was trying to play at that time. But, yeah, it is kind of interesting that someone could have that long a career and never feel the need to get a little more schooled in music.
Did he have a big, soft spot in his heart for Wisconsin? Did that influence his career and his life, or was it just sort of a happenstance that he was born here?
Oh, he always considered Wisconsin home, and his mother continued to live here, and he came back periodically, and he always considered Wisconsin, you know, his roots, and he's buried in Waukesha, and you know, that was always his home base and his connection to his history.
Did he see himself as a musician first, or an inventor first, or was each just an extension of the other?
I think you nailed it. I think he considered them inseparable. You know, the technology was all about improving the tools of his art, and the art was all about making the best possible use of those tools that he had come up with.
Now, we've been talking about Les Paul the musician, Les Paul the inventor, but he was kind of a firecracker, wasn't he?
Very witty guy, very personable. Also, he had a lot of chutzpah, and throughout his career, there's a lot of stories about how he bluffed his way into the situations he wanted to get into. He basically conned his bandmates when he was living in Chicago, and he had a trio, and he conned his bandmates into moving to New York with him by basically lying to them and telling them that he was friends with the famous band leader Paul Whiteman. And they're like, okay, great, we'll go to New York and we'll connect with Paul Whiteman. He had never met Paul Whiteman. Paul Whiteman didn't know him from Adam. They got there, and basically they hung out in the building where the NBC studios were, and accosted another famous band leader, Fred Waring, and started playing for him in the elevator. And by the time they got up to the floor where Fred Waring's office was, they had a contract.
Wow, so that's the original elevator pitch right there.
Pretty much, yeah, a musical elevator pitch. And then he essentially did the same thing when he got to California. He wanted to connect with Bing Crosby, so he basically just kind of ambushed Bing and started playing. And you know, he was good enough that he couldn't help but take notice. So he succeeded in his ambush.
Bob, thank you so much for coming on and talking about him today on the anniversary of his birthday.
My pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
We were speaking to Bob Jacobson, the author of Les Paul Guitar Wizard. Les Paul's birthday would be today, June 9th.